This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and thank you very much for downloading the Scotland Outdoors podcast. I'm Mark Stephen, he's Ewan McElriff.
Yeah, slightly different one for us today. We're following the River Eithne from the start, way up in the hills, right down to the estuary. It's a little-known river in Aberdeenshire, but it's very dear to many people.
It says here, Eithne, a smooth, slow river of Aberdeenshire rising at the Wells of Eithne, 768 feet above sea level, and winding 35 1/8 miles east-southeastward through or along the borders of Forg, Ochterless, Fivey, Methlick, Tarvis, Ellen, Logiebuchan, Slains, and Foveran parishes, till it falls into the German Ocean near the seaport village of Newborough. I'm Mark Stephen, he's Ewan McElraith. That was an excerpt from the Ordnance Gazetteer of Scotland, and we're actually at the head of the Eithne.
Yeah, well, there's an ironic place called Eithne Wells, or the Wells of Eithne. The head of the Eithne. I can't see a damn thing.
Well, there's not much in the way of evidence of a river here at all. It's a bit mystifying. We're joined by Bob Davis, who's lived in this area for 40 years. He's a founding member of the Eithne Biodiversity Volunteers. Bob, are we being thick? Where's the river?
Well, it's wells is the obvious thing. I mean, it should be probably springs would be better. It's just boggy patches in fields. A few small burns, farm drains and things, but that's all it is, really. There's nothing magic, no sort of wishing well that you could throw money
into. My image of it, because the whole point of this programme is we're going to follow the Eithne from its source to the sea.
Well, you can do that.
I know, but I can't find
the source.
In my head, I'll just dip a cup into the wells of the Eithne, have a wee drink,
follow it down. If you can find the nearest burn or the nearest boggy patch in the field, that would do you.
There's loads of boggy stuff. I mean, you're right there.
Yeah, you can see the rushes, look. Yeah. Plenty of it.
There's evidence of a Roman camp somewhere around about here.
Yes, a couple of kilometres down the road, Glen Malin Farm. That goes back 2,000 years, almost. Mm. It actually ties in with the river, because one of the reasons it's here is because it's potable water. You know, and that was one thing they did need, if they didn't need anything else. So there's two camps, actually. The first, I say, about 2,000 years old. That's a smaller one. That was, what's his name? General Agricola? Agricola.
Agricola.
Agricola, yeah. Agricola. I like the Agricola. Yeah. I think he invented a soft
sugar-free
drink.
Sugar-free Agricola. Yeah.
But that's about 13 hectares. And then there's a later one, which is about 40 hectares, kind of half overlying it.
And what can you actually see?
Not much.
A bit like the river there.
There's a few raised earthworks, and that's about it. That's all that remains. There were camps, there weren't forts, you see. I mean, so there wouldn't have been much there. It is interesting because it's one of the most northerly camps in Britain.
Tell me about the river. I was saying, I mean, according to the Ordnance Gazetteer, 35 1/8 miles long, but it used to be much bigger than that.
Well, I'm afraid I'm a metrification person. I might be a bit of a dinosaur in many ways, but I like the metric. Yeah, it's about 60 kilometres. Takes in a catchment of about almost 700 square kilometres, but that is minuscule to what it was. As you say, it used to be, I suppose, like the Don and the Dee, massive, massive rivers carrying glacial meltwater down to the German Ocean. I mean, some authorities say that it went out across the German Ocean and joined with what is today's Rhine coming in from the other side. Oh. So it was pretty big.
A lot of people in Scotland won't have heard about the Eithne, apart from those that live up here. Why is it so special?
Its size is one thing, but if nothing else, one of the crown jewels, a pearl, is from the Eithen. But no, it's a lovely...
A freshwater pearl?
Yeah, freshwater pearl.
All right.
It's a lovely little river, it really is. And it's just, I suppose little is the operative word, because the Don and the Dee, big rivers, everyone knows them. The Devron, you go up to the Spey. One thing that does make it unique, of course, is at the bottom end, where it turns into an estuary. Mm-hmm. None of the other rivers have got an estuary. They just run into the sea, but the Eithen, no, it's very different.
Come across to the bonnet of this car, because I cheated this morning, right? I've tried getting the Ordnance Survey maps and basically sellotaping them together. The trouble is I'm missing sheet 29. So I can only get it so far. I can't get it as far as the Wells of Eithen.
No.
But you just look at this, and it's dropping hardly any distance at all in that. Like, it must be a really slow running river.
It is very slow. The word Eithen, if you ask 10 people, you get 10 different versions. But the one that I think is probably quite appropriate is from an old Brittonic word, a Celtic language, meaning language, speaking, rambling in the sense of walking rambling, but in England you've got the sort of babbling brook. Up here you've got the chattering stream, and that's really one of the things that they think it is. But in terms of drop, you're absolutely right. I mean, you go from Metlick to Ellen, what's that, about 15 kilometres, it drops 5 metres.
That's nothing.
So it's 1 metre every, roughly 1 metre every kilometre.
Does that mean it was navigable then, for a certain extent?
Certainly as far as Ellen, and by even smaller boats probably further up.
How far have you got to go down from here before you actually see something that's recognisable as a river or a stream or isn't a boggy bit?
Not far, because it actually drops very quickly from here. I mean, we're talking about a very, very slow flowing shallow river, but from here, of course, it drops. As you can see, if you look across at the landscape, it's dropping down to the Eithen Valley very quickly. But it's only a tiny burn. I mean, you could wash your face in it just about, and that's all.
So what are we liable to see on the journey from the Wells to the estuary?
it's a fascinating river all the way down, because as you said, looking at the map, it bends, it twists, it turns. I suppose, to be honest, once you get down to Gecht, I mean, the braes of Gecht are absolutely superb. None of the other rivers have got anything like Gecht. And then, of course, you've got the castle with all the creepy things and the legends. Ah, you've got lots of others. You've got Fyvie Castle. You've got Terry Barclay Castle down the bottom here, and so on. And then, of course, you've got Elm, and finally down to the estuary. And, I mean, it's an internationally important site for wildlife.
Well, from here we head off. You're heading off.
Well, you mentioned Terry Barclay Castle. We're going to go and see if we can speak to the owner of that.
Yeah.
Where are you going?
Well, I'm going to head off to Fyvie Castle, because this area, for whatever reason, is an absolute hotbed of ballads. There's lots of stories here. Before I get to that, you get to Terry Barclay.
Singing as we go.
I'm Mark Eddington, and my home is Towie Barclay Castle. My wife and I have been here for getting on for almost 50 years.
Now, like any proper castle, it's stuffed to the gunwales full of suits of armour and swords. How did you go about getting all this stuff?
Well, some of the things we had previously, and we've made a concerted effort to acquire paintings and objects relating directly to the castle or to its history or the period in which it was lived in.
Let's go outside, because it's a beautiful day out there. We've got the Eithen over in front of us, and you're just above the floodplain here. It's a beautiful pink castle.
Well, it is. Towie Barclay Castle was established in 1136 by a member of the Barclay family who had previously been at Barclay with a K, Barclay Castle, Downsooth. The Barclays remained here for, going on 600 years, after which the building and the estate were acquired by the Earl of Finlatter.
Now, when I was a rich oil man, when I moved up here, I wanted to own a castle. I looked for castles, and I coveted your castle, something awful. But you bought it as a ruin.
Yes, the building hadn't been lived in for over 200 years. Previously, my work involved songwriting and singing.
A wee bit with Fairport Convention as well.
I'm guilty as charged, yes. But my wife and I wanted to restore a building, and this was the building that suited us ideally.
It must have been a bit daunting, though. Or is it always, I really, really want a castle?
It was daunting once we actually acquired the building and realised the practicalities in carrying out the scope of work necessary to conserve, restore and create a home out of what had been, you know, semi-ruinous.
Now, it's all very well buying a castle, as you do, but how do you kind of square that circle of turning it into home as well?
I think you have to kind of make certain that you create the accommodation you require without in any way compromising the historic fabric of the building. And this is a Category A historic building of immense importance.
How do you sleep at night with that responsibility? Because, you know, you're caring for this for the nation.
Well, it's a lot of work. My wife is amazing, Karen. She is a very talented and award-winning gardener, and she laid out the garden and grounds of the building and contributed to the work going on when we were restoring the building. We were both very hands-on at that time.
Must have been scary financially, though.
It was, but, you know, you take things slowly and do them as you're able. And as an outcome, if you've done it right, you've achieved a good restoration job and provided yourself with a very, very interesting and enjoyable home. At the time we carried out the work to this building, to restore the building, there were a number of people within the building trade that had had experience working on traditional buildings, and they benefited greatly, and some were well beyond retirement age, and that was a major contributing factor to what we were able to achieve.
I've just got this lovely image of an army of pensioners putting this castle back together.
Well, it wasn't quite like that, but there were a few. But it's interesting, since we completed the work here, it's become more and more apparent that there is a lack of the skills, knowledge and experience necessary to carry out major conservation.
But you are doing something about that. You're getting people and passing that knowledge on.
Well, yes. I, for a number of years, served on the board of Historic Scotland and the Heritage Lottery Fund, and that really convinced me we had to do something to get these skills passed on. So I established the Scottish Traditional Skills Training Centre, which provides a range of courses which will equip people with what they require.
Are you proud of what you've achieved?
We certainly are, and I think not a day goes by where I don't kind of recognise what a wonderful building this is.
It must be great. You stand and you say, I did that. Me and my wife did that.
Yeah, I think it is. But as I said, it was actually a group of people that we brought together to assist us in carrying out this work. And I think as an outcome of which, a building that is an integral element within the cultural, social history and heritage of this part of the world will last, again, hopefully, for a number of generations.
Mark, it's a great place. As I said at the start of this, I've always fancied it. And you've done a brilliant job. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Mark Ellington at Towie Barclay Castle there. It is a beautiful, beautiful building. The setting's magnificent.
As I said to Mark a couple of times, I've coveted that building so many times. Because it's on my way home. Yeah. And you come round the bend and there's this lovely, dinky wee castle in beautiful pink. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. We've come just slightly downstream of that because the River Eithen flows the back of Towie Barclay. And we were saying earlier, this is a slow-moving, meandering river. We thought, we'll stop here at the bridge and we'll get some nice gurgling noises, but it's not even making that much.
We're not doing very well. We can hear some traffic in the background.
Not a sausage.
This is a very slow-moving, quiet river. Yeah. But this bit, it dropped quite quickly after the pools of Eithen, the wells of Eithen, rather. And then you've got this big floodplain in front of Towie Barclay Castle that floods regularly. And this one's heading downriver to another remarkable feature of this river.
Well, this is known, this entire area is really known as Castle Country, this northeast corner of Scotland. The river at this stage is so straight and so, it's of a width that you'd almost think it was a canal. And the light is being picked up on either side here. If you follow this river, it takes you round the back of Fyvie Castle. Now, another interesting feature of this part of Scotland is nowhere else in the Western world possesses such a remarkably rich tradition of ballads and folk songs as this. It's extraordinary. You've got things like the Bonnie Lass of Fyvie, Mila Tifty's Annie, just a couple. Now, back in 2017, I met up with a lady called Hannah Tuoliki, who at the time was researching the ballads of the area. And she told me the research she'd done into the tale of Mila Tifty's Annie.
At Mila Tifty there lived a man in the neighbourhood of Fyvie. He had a bonny daughter dear, whose name was Bonnie Annie.
We're in Fyvie Kirkyard at the minute, and we're walking up to a grave. Have you heard of the ballad of Mila Tifty?
Yes.
Also known as Andrew Lammy. And the story tells of a young woman called Annie, who was the daughter of the miller of Tifty, just up the road here. And she was secretly in love with a trumpeter called Andrew Lammy, who was employed at the castle in Fyvie. And when her father discovered their relationship, he was furious and he wrote to the laird of Fyvie accusing Andrew Lammy of witchcraft. And then Annie refuses the laird's own proposal of marriage and Andrew is sent away. Some say he was sent to the West Indies, others say he was sent to Edinburgh. And the story continues, Annie is punished, so she's locked up in her room at the mill and she's beaten by her father and brother who breaks her back and she's laid out to die in her bed with her head facing Fyvie. She was a victim of domestic violence, essentially, and we are standing at her grave and you can't really quite make out the letters, but there's been rubbings made and it says, "Here lies Agnes Smith, who departed the 19th of January 1673." Mm-hmm. And Annie was Agnes Smith, Annie being the diminutive.
Yes. I find this strange that a victim of domestic violence should effectively become a local folk heroine, but she has.
Yeah, I think the song gained popularity over time, especially when the printing press was invented and there were loads of books that were printed with the lyrics of this song. And I think the popularity of the song is in part because it is a true story.
Her mother cried her to the door, saying, "Come here to me, my Annie. Did ere ye see a bonnier man than the trumpeter of Fyvie?" Thing she said, but sighing sore, "Alas, for bonnie Annie, she durst na own her hair to was won by the trumpeter of Fyvie."
So we're just coming onto Scough Bridge now, and this is Scough Burn, which runs in confluence with the River Eithin. And behind us are the remains of the Woods of Fyvie, which in the ballad is where Andrew and Annie first met.
Going back to the story of the ballad, I mean, they're the two young people who fall in love. But, you know, the father then accuses him of witchcraft. You know, he cannot believe that a musician has captured the heart of his daughter. So, you know, and that's a serious accusation at the time. You know, potentially that could get you killed.
Yes, indeed. And as a father, he had aspirations for Annie to actually marry the Laird of Fyvie. Annie didn't have any rights in this situation.
No.
She had no choices. But yet she stood up strong to her father and in the face of his misogyny, she refused to marry Lord Fyvie.
Lord Fyvie, by the bell. What ails ye, bonny Annie? It's all for love that I'm in deed for bonny young Annie.
So this is the bridge where Andrew and Annie parted. So it's where they met for the last time before Andrew was sent away either to Edinburgh or the West Indies. And at that point, Andrew says to Annie that they will be married. He'll buy her a bridal dress. But interestingly, Annie has a premonition that she's going to be dead and buried before he returns.
Had she been born a richer king, as she is rich in beauty, we'll award it in the last myself and made her mine.
We're just walking towards the castle now, and if you look up there, you can see on that turret a wee sculpture, a wee gargoyle of a trumpeter.
Right.
And according to the legend, this tower is where Andrew Lamy played his trumpet for the last time after he met Annie at the burn. Uh-huh. And before he went off. And this sound would have echoed through the landscape. And if we go up to the mill of Tifty, I'll tell you a little bit about what happened there.
Oh, Fyvie's lands are far and away, and they are wondrous bonny, but I would na gie my ain true love, no for all.
So this is the mill house itself, and you know, we are walking through the remnants of a wall at the moment.
As we get to the mill, you'll see there's remains of what looks like a 19th century water wheel.
Yeah.
I know from the ballad that this is where Annie would have been locked in her room. So after Andrew and Annie parted at the bridge, uh-huh. Andrew went off to play his trumpet one last time at the castle, and Annie was locked in her room here, and the sound of the trumpet would have echoed across the landscape. And in the ballad, Annie's father belittles her, saying, "Can you hear the sound of that cow lowing?" And Annie says, "I'd rather that cow than all the cows of Fyvie." Again, she's standing up to her father, and there's a brilliant line in one of the versions, which she's really strong. She says, "Hold your tongue, father dear." So she's really standing up to him at that point. And it's that part of Annie that I'm drawn to.
Oh, mother, mother, mark my bed and lay my face to Fyvie. Thus will I lie.
The tragic tale of the Mill of Tifty's Annie, and showing me around the locations associated with that ballad, was Hannah Tuolugi. I recorded that back in 2017 when she was working on a project of the ballads of the area. She's an incredibly talented woman.
There's so many ballads and songs. This whole trip down the Eithin could almost be a bothy ballad. You know, the Bonny Lass of Fyvie, where we are at the moment, we're just going through the gate and the gardens.
Yeah. Well, you might be, if you can get
it
home. Come on, everybody shove.
It's a three-man gate, I think.
It's a three-man gate. We're actually in the grounds of Fyvie Castle, and we've still got Bob Davis with us here, because we're heading for the loch. And I can't work out whether this feeds into the Eithin or the Eithin feeds into it, or
It's the other way around. The Eithin would feed into it, but the Eithin's way over on your right-hand side. Good bit of way.
It's a really popular place for dog walkers and children and everywhere.
Picnickers.
There's people picnicking back there. We've got people walking their children around the loch. It's a delightful place. Yeah.
The trees just coming into leaf now too, as
beautiful.
Well.
Beautiful. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we've got the best of both worlds. You've got a good selection of conifers, and as you say, you've got the broadleaves were now just showing a kind of veil of green over them. They're beautiful.
Just coming along the side of the loch there, there was grey heron, there's obviously this mute swan, moorhen.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the wildlife on the Eithin, what is that?
Oh, tons of the stuff you've just mentioned.
Beat it off with a stick.
You've mentioned a few things. I mean, one thing you haven't mentioned, of course, are the things that are actually in the river, the fish. I mean, it's always been recognised as a very good fishing river, both not just for salmon, but both for salmon and sea trout, and brown trout as well. I think the largest salmon, supposed to have been about 19 kilos. That was back in 18-something by a Dr. Fowler from Ellen. But then someone found one dead, and I reckon it weighed about 25 and a half kilos.
Whoa.
But I think if you got one at sort of 4 or 5 kilos today, you'd be lucky. The other thing that's interesting that you get in the river, most people don't know anything about, are lampreys. Mm-hmm. Vampire fish, you know.
They're nasty. That's a, undersell it, go on.
They're a nasty little thing.
Well, that's it, yeah. That, I mean, some people call them vampire fish because what they do is they attach themselves to other fish and they've got a circular mouth with teeth and they bite into them and feed off the fish.
Uh-huh.
So they're really weird-looking things. They're a bit eel-like in shape. And, of course, they don't have gills because they're stuck to another fish. They don't have gills. They've got rows of holes just at the back of the mouth for taking in and expelling water.
But I was looking at, there's a swan nesting over there. There's a coot, the moorhen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And will you just have a listen for a couple of seconds? There's a lot going on there, isn't there?
Yeah, pheasants,
robins,
yeah.
Wood pigeon.
We were saying earlier, I mean, the Eithen is not a major river in this area. We've got bigger ones, we've got the Devon, we've got the Don. We've got the Dee, that kind of thing. But what always fascinates me about river, just thinking of it historically, in the past they were used for energy, in the past they were used for transportation. I mean, the number of mills it must have been on this river, 35 miles long or not.
If you look on a map, I mean, everything you look at is mill of this, little mill, big mill, small mill, a mill town of this, the old mill town everywhere. But yeah, of course, people use the river. But one thing, I mean, you started off talking about the Roman camp up at Eithen Wells, but one thing the river was a route of access to early man. It was starting off at the top end of the river and going down to the sea, whereas in point of fact, man's occupation of the area started at the bottom and worked its way up. Mm-hmm. The first occupants of this area were what known as strand loopers. They used to come up the coast, up the strand, because that was the only point of access. I mean, looking at all the trees around here, you imagine 8,000 years ago, this was part of the largest oak forest in the Northern Hemisphere. If you was a squirrel, you could have got on a tree at Bodham and got off a tree at Ardnamurchan, and that would have been it. It was incredible. So rivers, the coast, of course, and then rivers made a point of access. So they really used the Eithen as a road.
Yeah. Anyway, you're listening to Out of Doors on BBC Radio Scotland. We are not live today. Instead, we're exploring a little-known river right on our doorstep, the Eithen. But you can still email us at outofdoors@bbc.co.uk.
As you've been hearing, I've just come from Towie Barclay Castle, further up the river where the Eithen takes a really sharp turn, down towards here, where we are now.
And I'm just about to head off to Giftwood Nature Reserve, which I'm ashamed to say I'd never even heard of, or the castle, which exists on it, which, as the crow flies, is about 8 miles from where I live. I mean, as we've said before, we don't explore what's on our doorstep. Dr. Mark Young from the Scottish Wildlife Trust is the person who's volunteered to show us around this particular location. We're just walking amongst pine trees and larch at the moment, but just through the trees there, you can see the castle itself, and it looks fantastic. There's the Gardens of Haddo and the Gardens of Gicht. What's the difference between the two?
In about 1450-ish, one branch of the Gordons, then called the Gordons of Gicht, established this castle, this granite-built castle. There were a lot of lairds of the Gordons of Gicht between 1451 and when they finished, and it was generally said that they were either unfortunate or, I think, I don't know what you call them, unlawful, perhaps, would be the best way. The last of the Gordons of Gicht was Catherine Gordon, and she married Mad Jack Byron, and they were Byron's parents. But Jack was a complete spendthrift, and he gambled, and they ran out of money totally. And they had to sell the castle, and they sold the castle in in 1787 to the Gordons of Haddo. And they then went and lived in Aberdeen. And so Byron wasn't born here, but this is where his parents came from originally. Now, in 1787, the Gordons of Haddo owned this, and they established Lord Haddo, who was their son, to live here. And he only lived here for a few years, maybe 3 or 4 years. And it is said that he was killed in a fall from a horse that was caused by a servant girl clattering the buckets by the source of the water for the castle. And since that time, in 1793 or 94, this has been a ruined castle. So you now see the castle as it was in the 1790s, and it's just been falling down ever since.
Come on, let's get a closer look at it. I'm trying to envisage the house as it would have been.
There is the main entrance. Mm-hmm. Now, we can't really go in there because it's now derelict, and we're warned not to. And the rooms in the bottom here were the bakehouse and the brew house and the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And the main living area was at the first floor, and now you can see it's got no side to it, just on this point here. And then there would have been another story above that. So we've come onto the reserve. We've just come out of the field and onto the reserve, and here's our sign. And you can see that there's a track leading down the hill, and from the castle down to the river, this clearly was a very major route that they took. So let's do that, shall we?
A distinguishing feature of this river, I mean, as we're standing here looking down on it, because we're still probably, I don't know, 60, 70 feet above it, is this boggy floodplain on either side of it. It's quite narrow, but it's still not a big river, and it meanders. It's never in any sort of rush at all, the Eithen.
No, and the rocks on both sides, the cliffs on both sides, have constrained it into this meander here. Mm-hmm. So the course of the river, although there's a meander at the bottom there, which is within this valley, the general course of it then turning, as we see in the distance, is because of these rocky outcrops all the way along.
Yeah. If you imagine an S-shaped valley, the river disappears round the corner. On the other side of the river, there's coniferous plantations. So that's a sort of really dark bluey-green colour. Our side of the bank, you've got deciduous woodland and this bank heading up. And in the middle, you've got the river, and on either side of it, it's almost a sort of buff or honey-coloured vegetation and tracks immediately on either side of the river. It's just, it's a bonny wee place.
It's a glorious place, and you can hear the river really clearly now, which is lovely.
For the first time, just underneath this bridge, the Eithen is showing a bit of energy, a bit of enthusiasm. Has that bridge got a name?
Yeah, this is Hagbury Pot Bridge.
So explain the bridge name to me.
Right. Well, right in front of us is an area of the river which is called Hagbury Pot. Pot just meaning, as you can imagine, a deep hole. So the water comes under the bridge and swirls round, and there's a pot there. Now, when the tax collector, Gordon of Gicht, didn't pay in his taxes, in other words, he didn't really collect them, he stole them, he knew that the king's men were going to come and get him. And it is said that he threw his treasure into Hagbury Pot. It's said to be bottomless, which is complete nonsense, because you can see the bottom. However, the follow-up is nastier or nicer, whichever way you want to put it. Because once the king's men had gone away, the laird wanted his gold back. So he sent one of his men into the pot to collect the gold. And the guy came up again about 2 minutes later, a gibbering wreck, and said that the gold was there. It was on a table with the devil and some of his demons around the table feasting on boiled babies' heads.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
And so the laird said, well, never mind about that. You get back in there and get my things. And the chap was so scared of the laird, who would do all sorts of horrible things, he jumped back in the river and was never seen again.
Dr. Mark Young of the Scottish Wildlife Trust at Gicht Castle and Nature Reserve. Now, we've moved on again. We're now in the grounds of Haddo House, which is yet another highly impressive building just off the Eithen. Actually, we're standing just at the top of the Scots Mile with Susanna Atkinson. There's a huge long drive in front of us, and behind us an equally long view all the way down, hence the name the Scots Mile. Susanna, this has to be one of the most stunning buildings in Aberdeenshire.
Yes, I think so for sure. And I think that the fact that it's attached to this stunning country park and it has beautiful terrace gardens, it's such a lovely, safe environment for people to bring their children to.
How does it work? Because we've got the house and you've got the park. What's the split up there?
So, yeah, it's quite an interesting partnership. So the house is owned by the National Trust for Scotland. The country park is owned by Aberdeenshire Council, and then the outlying estate is still owned by Lord Aberdeen, which is by far the biggest element of the whole makeup of Haddo.
Mark said this is the Scots Mile. How long is it? Is this it here in front of us? Describe it.
Right, so the Scots Mile, as you'll know, looking at the Royal Mile in Edinburgh, is about 1.25 miles long. So we see part of it here ahead of us. And that's a direct, straight route all the way up from the house to the urn and the deer statues at the end of the mile. But it actually stretches about another quarter of a mile the other side of the house as well.
You better explain the urn, because I've walked up to the urn. We're not talking about an urn. This is an urn.
It's enormous.
It's huge.
Yes, it's huge. So we have a huge urn, and then we have the two deer statues. So these were, in fact, in memory of the fourth Earl's wife and three children who died of tuberculosis or consumption.
Yeah.
And some people think that the Scots Mile was at one point the drive, but it never was. The drive that you came down today is the same drive that's always been used.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would you not use a drive? This is a really big, long, impressive drive. If I was coming in my carriage, I would be coming up that.
Yeah, well, I think you've maybe got a fair point, but I guess there at that point, this is where the gentry would have stayed. So you would have to have entry to all the different farms and cottages, and there are still many buildings and farms on the estate. I live in one, and I think there's actually 112 houses still in the Haddo estate, which are rented out to people.
And I think you overestimate your abilities. If you wouldn't be coming up here in your carriage, you'd be following the carriage with a bucket and a shovel.
Thank you very much.
And it's a very big hill at the end, so I would like to see a horse and carriage get up and down that.
It's all about looks and appearances, isn't it?
That's exactly what it was, yes.
Tell me what we're heading towards here and what you've got.
So down at the Haddo Lake, and it is a lake, not a loch, because it's man-made, we have a vast array of ducks, mostly mallards. We pride ourselves in trying to keep all these ducks as healthy as possible. We have some teals going about as well. We have quite a few geese and we have two swans. This is, say, our ranger, David Brown.
We've got two types of geese here, greylag geese and we've got Canada geese as well. So the greylag geese here are pretty tame and they're here all year round, whereas their wild cousins will soon be migrating to the Arctic to breed up there. Do you think we ought to tell them about the swus?
We were talking about this yesterday, that geese and swans can in fact mate. And when they mate, the coming child is called a swoos.
You're making that up.
No, really, seriously.
I've never heard of that.
Have you not? Well, unless...
until I saw it. There was this swan chasing geese in a very determined manner. Uh-huh. And finally, I imagine it was a he, got hold of one. And I thought he was actually trying to drown the goose because it was just seemed to be like sitting on top of this goose, and this went on for a long time. Eventually the goose made it to shore and I thought, well, it's over now, but the swan got out and just sat down on top of it again, and then after a while got off, and the goose seemed to be none the worse for the experience. But it'll be interesting.
Would they be able to interbreed though?
They do. I didn't know that they did interbreed until yesterday. And I found out that on inquiry, because, well, Susanna did, you knew, didn't you?
Yeah, no, I found out last year, yeah.
Yeah.
You just didn't tell anybody. Sense of decency.
Yes, exactly. But last year we had a lot of geese here, a lot more than we would usually have, because lots of local bodies of water dried up, because it was such a dry summer. So we ended up with about 250 to 300 geese, many of them very tame, very domesticated, and quite unusual. So whilst I was trawling through the internet trying to identify all these different geese, I came across the spruce. which is this park goose.
And 5
park
weeks song. Later, it laid an Easter egg.
Honestly.
She's got an honest face right now. Yeah, never mind.
You've also got a bag of feed.
I have, yeah. Yes. So we're quite particular about what we feed the birds down here. And I know there's quite a lot of debate online just now about whether or not you should feed bread and what have you. We always advise don't feed bread, especially in places like Haddo, because we could easily have 500 families coming down here at a weekend.
Each with a pan loaf. Yeah.
Exactly. Not just with one or two slices, but they might have 2 or 3 loaves with them. Mm-hmm. And if they're eating that much bread, then they're not going to get the nutrition that they need. We sell seed at the shop, so there's no excuse really, but you could also take oats from home, you could take sweet corn, you could take defrosted peas. There's lots of stuff you can feed them. Just don't feed them bread.
And you've got some noisy gulls as well.
Yes, well, they're everywhere, aren't they?
Yeah. We're very inclusive here at Haddo. Everybody's welcome.
We don't discriminate.
No.
Even the swooses.
Yeah. Especially the swooses.
Susanna Atkinson and David Brown at Haddo Country Park.
It's a magical wee place. I've been coming here for donkey's years and it is great. And this wood we're in at the moment, this is proper. Bring your white pebbles with you because you get lost in that.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic to see so many people just enjoying it. Because as you and I came in, we thought there was a big event on, but there's not. It's just mob.
It's just a fine day.
With children and dogs and parents just
and
having a
school holidays, obviously, too. That also helps. Well, we have followed the river, basically alongside the road from Haddo to Ellen. We're sitting beside the Market Street car park, actually on the riverbank itself, myself and Ewan and Bob Davis is still with us. And just on our right-hand side there is the old Ellen Bridge, which was built in 1793. There's an illustrated architectural guide by Ian Shepherd who describes this bridge as sturdy, no-nonsense. It's actually quite a good description.
It's pretty good, isn't it? Yes. But the original timber archways that would have used to form the bridge, apparently the wood was floated down the Don, up the coast and back up the Eithen to here. So, you know, the river's always played its part, even in building a bridge across it. But the one thing about the old bridge is you can just about make it out from here? There's an extra arch hidden up behind the trees there. And that was put in to cope with floodwaters.
Okay.
Yeah, because it
floods pretty badly. Oh, We're quite close to the river at the moment.
Yeah. Actually, by the time you get to this stage in Ellen, this is a proper river. It's got a bit of heft to it.
Anyway, it's a start.
Exactly. It's not like that puddle we started off with.
Oh, no. You can wash your face here if you want to, Mark. Yeah, right.
It was Emmett wanted to do that.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to be doing that later on in the programme.
Oh, dear.
We're going to get in it.
Well, the idea is we're actually, because this is interesting, we're going to take canoes down from here, down to the estuary itself, which I'm looking forward to, because effectively what we're doing is we'd be doing the reverse of a journey that people used to do all the time. The reason Ellen is here.
No, not really. The reason Ellen was here is actually in front of you. It was a ford. Mm-hmm. The ford was opposite the old New Inn, which is behind us. What, about a kilometre down from here is what we call the Meadows. And the Meadows was the kind of landing point for small boats that would first sailed up and then sort of punted up from Newburgh. Boats coming into the estuary at Newburgh unloaded at Mitchell and Ray's Wharf. And they unloaded them onto small barges and then ended up with a small paddle steamer. Shallow draft, you see.
I want to do that. Who's got the paddle steamer?
Well, I'm afraid you've only got pictures of it these days.
See, it's interesting, there's islands further downstream, but if Ellen was here because it was fordable, why is there a ferry down there? Because there was a ferry down there once upon a time.
Yes, there were lots of ferries. That's the famous Boaty Tams ferry, or Boaty Mary, as was originally. That was just a passenger ferry. But that ran until middle of 20th century. But what you're seeing here really is fortunate because this is part of Ellen Riverside Park. Anyway, you can't deny it was the brainchild of the late John Milne. I mean, he could see that with Ellen, half of it on one side of the river, half on the other, eventually with the planning laws as they were, it was going to come together and the Eithen would be concreted over or something. So he formed a group and they purchased what is known as the Glebe Field, That was 1980, something like that, 1970 or 1980 when it started up. Having purchased the glebe field, the old Eithen Amenity Trust went on to pressurise the then Gordon District Council into creating what is now the whole of this Riverside Park. So the whole lot from just up by the railway viaduct, which is further upstream, down to the meadows is part of the Ellen Riverside Park.
But you were mentioning the hotel a bit a little earlier. There's a barber shop next to it. Tell me the story.
Well, it's changed its name.
No, it's still up there.
Oh, is it? Well, it used to be called You're in Al's Barber Shop. It's just called Al's Barber Shop.
It's called Al's Barber Shop.
It was U, the letter U, dash R, dash in Al's Barber Shop, because it was a lavatory. It was a public lavatory, the urinal.
Urinal.
It was very brilliant.
You're in Al's. I think it's a stroke of genius.
It is, isn't it? It's clever.
On that
good
happy note,
words.
Bob, it's been great having your company down so far. As I said, we've got to go into the canoes and sort of head down from there, but it's been a pleasure seeing you again.
Enjoy the river on the way down.
We were delighted to have Bob Davis as our companion so far along the Eithen, but this is a different day and we've come back basically to Ellen.
Yeah, we've come back to the river. Bob has been great on the journey down, but we're leaving the cars and we're going to get into the water with a bit of trepidation.
It's canoes. We've got Lyle Smith here from Granite Adventures. My first question is there enough water in that river?
There is today, and the lucky bit about the section we're doing is it's tidal. So soon after we leave Ellen, we enter the tidal water. We've got high tide coming up soon, so we've got no problem with enough water to see us through to Newbury.
So it's going to shoot us all the way down?
Let's hope so. The only challenge we've got today is the wind is going to try and shoot us all the way back up again.
Because the wind's kind of blowing straight up the river at the moment.
Yeah, we've got Canadian canoes. I'm probably the reason that we're in Canadian canoes today rather than kayaks.
You're one of the reasons. I'd be the other one.
I got a really bad habit of falling out of kayaks. So anything we need to know about the canoes?
Stay on the inside.
Yeah.
The inside and the upside is definitely the best side. I know you've both got a bit of experience, but when we just get on the water just now, we'll look at the strokes we need to use just to manoeuvre around some of the rocks that we've got until we enter the deeper water when we hit the tidal section.
But looking at the speed of that water, we're not going to get a lot of time for messing around. We're going to put them in and we're going to be off.
Yeah, so the strokes we'll be looking at today will be ones that will just help us control the direction of the boat and make sure we're always pointing downstream.
Right, let's get the boats in the water then. We're going to take two canoes. I'll just get his one in first.
I'm just going to get you properly afloat.
Have you got a paddle there?
Why, do you need the seat lever, Doc? The river obviously runs right the way through Ellen. It's a distinguishing character of Ellen. It is not the warmest of days today, but it's coming into spring, so the trees are coming into bud, the leaves are coming out, we've still got daffodils on the bank, sun shining on the water. This could be a lot worse.
It certainly could. I always love seeing towns and villages from the water. It's just a very different perspective to see them. Coming into Aberdeen as well, if you're coming in on the Dee and the Don, is just beautiful. Yeah. Just such a different way to see a city or town.
Yeah, we've been talking about the river all the way from the wells right at the start, but now we're actually getting into it. It's getting a bit more exciting. What's the plan?
So from here, we're just going to start off rafted up to begin with, because we've got a little bit of speed here. So we'll stay with the two boats together, and then once we get round the next couple of corners, the river eases a little bit, and then we'll be on our way.
Okay, fair enough. Right, okay. If I just hang on to your boat. There you go.
Okay.
And we're just basically letting the river do the work at the moment.
We are at the moment. That's why it's nice we've got a bit of water today.
Yeah.
So, gents, it's up to yourself. Whenever you want to paddle yourselves and paddle your own boat, that's no problem. Up till then, we can stay rafted up as one unit.
Let's go for it.
Okay.
You happy?
Yep.
Well, we've now swapped jobs. Mark is now the power horse and in charge of steering. Well, we're currently zigzagging our way down the river. I think if we just drifted, we'd probably go in a straighter line. But that wind is kicking up.
It is extremely windy. I mean, basically, we've got the river current carrying us theoretically downstream, but the wind will more or less stop you dead.
Putting an extra option of stopping a little bit early just to make sure we can deal with the wind. When we get down to the estuary, it might just get a little bit too wild.
So just catching up to Lyle's boat here because there's some horrible black lumps in the front of us.
Yeah, we've got a tree in the river. It's always one thing to be very wary of as a paddler. So we're just going to stick to the middle of the stream and stay nice and wide of that tree.
There's a couple of big rocks as well.
There is, but we've got a nice channel through the centre. We can see in the middle there's some water flowing through, which is definitely wide enough for our canoes. There's a little bit of ripples, but we'll be absolutely fine.
The thing I also notice about this lark is that you become much more aware of the bends and the curves in the river.
You know, do.
It's a bit like the difference between driving and cycling. You don't notice a hill until you're on a bicycle.
And then you definitely notice it.
And then you definitely notice it. And you don't really notice a bend in the river until you're actually on the thing and you think, well, I've no idea what's around that corner.
That's true. You just become in tune with the environment you're in when you're travelling at a slower speed, don't you?
Yeah.
Now we've got to the section of the river where it's really started to widen out. We're starting to get to the edges of the tidal water and we're definitely noticing that there's not much flow with us.
No.
So we're now having to do all the work to combat that wind.
Yeah, I'm not sure I like it.
I suspect that's why we will use our early get out rather than our planned get out at Newbra.
Well, we've got an island in front of us and we've got the bypass above us. And we've got a choice going left or right. Lyle suggested going left. But there's a big tree sticking out there.
Big tree sticking out of it and ripples at the entrance to it. Which kind of makes me wonder what's there, but it's maybe just an optical illusion, who can tell?
I think we'll go second, will we?
We're not seeing too much in the way of wildlife this morning. It's a bit of a shame, that's one of the reasons we made it a bit of an early start.
Well, we have seen a swan and a couple of ducks.
Yeah, there's been a few things about. I guess the swans, the ducks, we always see them. I was hoping we might see something a little bit more exciting this morning.
Such as?
Oh, I don't know.
Shopping trolley. Yeah.
There's definitely a few shopping trolley and bins around now that we've got into the section of river that comes in and out due to the tidal aspect of the river. So these things just float here. I think that bin has been there for at least 8 months that I remember.
It's a big bin.
It is.
Yeah. Good grief, there's another bin. Or a small shed or something of the kind, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, the rivers have got quite a lot of debris along them, even since the flooding in 2016. They are slowly getting cleared up, but it takes its time.
Yeah.
And we had some of the highest river levels recorded around these parts. So after that, it wasn't uncommon to go paddling past a double glazing block on the wind on the bank or...
Yeah.
A gas bottle from somebody's caravan who'd unfortunately lost it.
It's really widened out now, and we've got bulrushes as well.
We do, yeah. As we get into the lower section of the river, it definitely changes character, and just even our surroundings change. The land around us is much flatter, and as we just meander down the bottom section out towards Newbra.
But if we're going to meander anywhere, we're going to have to paddle, unfortunately.
We are today.
Because we're just stopped dead in the water.
The last time I was on this section, we had a lovely tailwind and it made this so much easier.
Oh, yeah. Did you not have organised that?
I don't have those connections, I'm afraid.
That's interesting that you made. When we started off at Eithen Wells, we were looking for a spring, a bubbling, crystal clear spring that we could wash our faces in. Well, he was. And there's nothing, it's boggy ground, basically. And then about 2 miles down the hill from there, you begin to see something that's about a foot and a half wide. And now we've got something that must be about... It's nearly 100 metres across this section.
Oh, easily. Now that we're down the bottom of the river, it's just widened out so much. And as we continue down into the estuary, it gets even wider still. In some areas, it could easily be 300-400 metres across. A lot of this water, though, of course, is tidal. So that's where it's coming from. The Eithen is only putting out about 6 to 7 cubic metres of water per second, which in river terms is quite small.
It's nothing, really.
It's really not.
Yeah. And yet, you know, again, every time we say something when we do this kind of trip, 35 miles long and absolutely packed with interest. You know, not just the sort of natural heritage, the built heritage, what actually goes on economically in the area, everything.
Yep, and it's just beautiful from a paddler's perspective. We've got a really nice bit of land to come through. There's so much going on, as you say, in terms of wildlife. It's just really nice.
Right, this is not working to plan, is it?
No, not today. That headwind is providing quite a challenge, so today we just put in an extra measure. We put in an extra car at a midway point just to give us an option if the wind was proving too much, and it looks like today, I'm afraid, we're going to have to use that option.
But it is almost the end of the river. We're not in the estuary, but technically we've come from the start to the end.
We have. We've made that journey. Today we've connected the section from Ellen almost all the way down.
You'll note the word almost.
Almost, but, you know, nobody's perfect.
We'll just have to come back another day.
That's it. But seriously, I mean, the wind has picked up to the extent that you kind of get the feeling that if we just gave up, it would take us back to Ellen.
I think we'd be there in no time.
Okay.
Right, one last push.
Onwards, onwards. Right, any minute now, we're going to go hard left. Okay, on you go. I claim this land for out of doors.
Beautiful.
Ah! And then we count the canoe. There we go. So, thoughts?
Well, looking at this two ways, in the short term, I'm really glad to be out the canoe. Knees are a bit stiff, but it was lovely, and it's just delightful countryside. And it finished, you know, it's that great feeling of being somewhere you've never been before, and this is right on our doorstep. And it's been a great journey.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think the entire thing from basically Eithan Wells down to here has been something of a revelation.
From a bog to a river.
Yeah, aye, and a proper river too. Aye. One of these days, when it's not blowing a hoolie straight up the estuary, it'd be nice to go back and do the estuary again.
Yep, we need to do that.
Lyle, thank you very much for taking us. We've been very kind of you.
No problem.
Sadly, that's all we've got time for. Thank you very much for joining us on this trip down the Eithan. Don't forget the Scotland Outdoors podcast. But from all of the team in BBC Aberdeen, the vast majority of which are standing here up to their ankles in mud at the side of the River Eithan, thanks for listening.